Jerry.
It gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker tonight and a personal friend, Steve from Ventura.
Steve, alcoholic.
Steve.
I'd like to first thank Stan for asking me to come up here. I'd like to thank Jason for giving these guys my number to call me up. I've been putting this off for a long time, and I just wasn't ready. I'd like to thank Sebastian and Mike for coming up with me. It's nerve-wracking for me to come up here because I get anxiety, and I haven't done this that many times, and being in a group of people I don't really know, and the reason why I do this, I don't usually wear a tie and a button-up shirt, but the reason I do this is because my sponsor told me early on that it's out of respect for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it saved my life. It's given me a life beyond my wildest imagination. My heart's pumping.
Good.
I got a lot of stuff to say. Yeah, I just hope I can get it all out before I get a panic attack or something. So what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What it was like for me is, I'll just start at the beginning. My mom had me when she was 15. My dad was 19. And, I'm pretty sure it was like a one-night stand type of deal. And charges were filed against my dad. And anyway, I was supposed to go up for adoption. And, as soon as I popped out, my grandma intervened and said, fuck, he's too good at looking at the kid. We're just going to keep... after living in that household, I wish I would have gotten adopted, let me tell you. So I'd never met my dad before, and I was born in Oregon. We moved to Lompoc, not far from here, so I grew up in Lompoc, and enough said, right? It's not for me to say if my grandma was alcoholic or not, but what I could see, I thought that she was. She worked in a bar. She would bring drugs home, and she would leave her drug paraphernalia out. I could never invite any of my friends to come over to the house because she was a crazy-ass cat lady, and she fucking had cats all in the house, shitting everywhere. So already I felt indifferent, None of this stuff makes me an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is that when I ingest alcohol, I can't control how much I consume. I don't know what's going to happen. There have been times where I've had two drinks and I was able to put it down. But there were times where I said I was going to take two drinks, and more times than not, I overshot the mark. That's what makes me an alcoholic. I can't control, what happens after I ingest alcohol. We were super poor growing up. All through middle school, I was just kind of like a class clown. It was my way of trying to ease a reality that was unbearable. I would come home, I would get whooped on by my grandma, and she was pretty tough, and I was always getting in trouble, and she would whoop me with a wooden spoon for the dumbest stuff. I'd say my first drink, I was about 14 years old, and my classmates, I always felt less than, and I felt like they had good families, and they had money, and they had cool shoes, and I always wore pearl wings, and just the stupidest clothes you can imagine, and I always felt out of place. And so I remember my first drink, I grabbed some of my grandma's Canadian Mist, and I remember what it felt like when I first started drinking. The first thoughts that were coming into my head when I started catching the buzz was, if only those kids could see me now. I felt as good. Actually, I felt better than my schoolmates. Fast forward, it was just on from there. Every chance I got, I would drink, and, drugs are a part of my story, too. I started to hope I don't offend anybody, but I started smoking weed a little bit. So I started smoking weed, and then I was hanging out with these guys, and they were that were doing kind of the same thing. They were kind of brought up the same way I was. Well, not as bad what I thought my perception was, but you know, we were sniffing paint and doing coke, and then eventually meth, and it was just downhill from there. I started going to juvenile hall, you know, shortly after I first started drinking and using, because I started sneaking out my window, and I was robbing cars, and just running amok out on the streets, and my grandma couldn't control me anymore, and, you know, she was way into her disease, and she ended up losing her house and renting a room somewhere. So when I would get locked up, I went to Santa Maria Juvenile Hall a bunch of times, and Santa Barbara Juvenile Hall, and I went to the Los Fredos Boys Camp, and I went to a group home up north, and every time I would get out, you know, I didn't have a place to stay, so a lot of times the court granted my friend's mom custody of me, and, you know, I stayed with them, and she was one of these ladies that kind of let her kid and me do whatever we wanted, and there wasn't really no structure, so we were partying and drinking and kind of doing what we wanted. There was no male figure in the house but us, and we were running amok. Just in and out of jails, and, you know, there came a point where I couldn't stay out from being locked up more than 2 weeks. I would go in, and I would think, okay, it's going to be different this time. I'm going to stick to just drinking a little bit, and it never works out that way. It never worked out that way for me. And, you know, just went off to harder things, you know, finally, you know, the mom, my friend's mom, kind of kicked him out and kicked me out, and then we were both, like, homeless, and I was just staying on friends' couches, and you know, whatever goes, you know, what goes along with that kind of lifestyle is I'm just robbing people, robbing stores, schools a lot, getting the TVs and VCRs and trading it for dope or, you know, money to eat, and or robbing houses in the broad daylight. And I remember one time I broke into a house, and this is how sick I was, with a buddy of mine. We're in this house, and there was one room that was locked. And I got a screwdriver on me, and I'm standing next to this door, keeping guard while my friend's unhooking the stereo system with a screwdriver, thinking, fuck, I'm gonna kill this person if he comes out. You know? But, I mean, nobody came out, thank God. But when I look back at that, I could have gotten killed myself or went to prison for the rest of my life for a couple hundred bucks. It's just crazy to me. So just that was my lifestyle. When I wasn't locked up, I was homeless and I was running amok. One time I was sitting in county jail, and I remember I'm just standing there, I'm watching TV, and I'm thinking, fuck, man, this is going to be my life for the rest of my life, because I don't know how to change, and I don't know what to do. I think right there God intervened and did for me what I couldn't do for myself, and I got court ordered to do the rescue mission program in Santa Barbara. And the rescue mission was good. It got me a firm spiritual connection with a power greater than myself. But the problem was they didn't really give me a design for living, you know. So I was there for 8 months. It was a year program. I got kicked out. I was 18. I was constantly, like, fucking around and not showing up to my job I was supposed to be doing. So they exited me. And it was court ordered, so it violated my probation. When they exited me, I went back to Lompoc and immediately went on the run. And so I'm on the run, and I'm doing the same thing I usually do. I'm robbing people, I'm stealing shit, I get locked up and, you know, do it all over again. Let me backstep that for a minute. I get out, and I'm running amok, and I'm starting to use meth a lot. And I went into this thing called meth psychosis. I don't know if anybody has done that, but I started acting fucking super crazy. Oh my God. I one of my friends said, I came to his house with no shoes, no shirt, my hands are bloody. And he was like, dude, he felt sorry for me. And he gave me a shirt and some shoes. And he was all, man, you need to get out of here. You're tripping. But he hooked me up with some clothes. He said, I came back an hour later with no shoes, no shirt again. Just out of my mind. Another friend told me I'm sitting down the road from his house. I'm talking to a tree. My aunt told me I went to the neighbors and you know, I had a little steel pipe and I walked in their front door and I told the people there I'm here to protect the kids. And I don't even think they had kids. You know, that's just where my disease takes me. It really takes me to dark places. And so during this psychosis, you know, I'll get locked up here in a second, but... During this time, okay, I end up back at my aunt's house, and I'm fucking laying in her grass, she said, and I'm doing, you know, like people lay down and do snow angels. And, okay, so the cops rolled up on me and be like, what the hell, what do you want, dude? I didn't know, man. I didn't know what I was even saying or thinking. So they locked me up, and I'm still in this psychosis for, I think, like about a month. But apparently... You know, when I got locked up and they took me into custody, I tried to swing on the officers there. And I do have little flashes of what it was like being beaten down by the police and twisted up. And I remember the expression on their faces when I'm on the ground, and they just look so tired. I remember they looked tired and they were sweating. I must have been putting up a fight. But I barely remember that. But I do still sometimes have flashbacks to that. So then I went into the rubber room. They threw him in the rubber room because I'm out of my mind, completely out of my mind. And if you've never been in the rubber room, it's this room and it fucking stinks like piss in there. There's a hole in the ground with a little grate on it where you're supposed to pee and poop. So I'm in there butt naked, probably because they feared that I was going to hurt myself and they didn't want me to choke myself out with my pants or something. But I'm in there naked. And I'm pissing and pooping everywhere but that hole right there. I'm peeing on the walls, and, you know, I'm pooping on the ground, but that's not the worst part. I'm barefoot, and I'm smearing it with my feet. I like to call it trudging the road to nasty, nasty misery. It was disgusting. And I don't know what I was thinking. I was really out of my mind. I talked to a nurse after, you know, I started clearing up a little bit, and she said, you know, as far down the scale as you've gone, it's a miracle that you can even talk straight right now. And, you know, I'm just thinking it's God looking out for me, because where I was headed was jails, institutions, and death. So I'm up here. I'm not trying to promote the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a program of attraction, not promotion. And I'm thankful for that, because I don't think I'd be around here if it was promotion. I got court ordered again to that rescue mission where I was there for about 6 months, and I seen this guy come in, and he was shot out, and he was an old heroin and alcoholic, and he looked about 60 years old. And I remember he came in and, you know, started eating, and he got a sponsor, started working the steps, and I seen this man transform from a 60-year-old looking guy to what he really was, 30. And you know, he cleaned up really good, and he started being able to he was dressing good, and he had a hot girlfriend. I was 19 years old, so the things that attracted me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous aren't the same things that attract me to it now. So what attracted me in the beginning was I seen this guy do the steps, and his life transformed. He had a hot girlfriend, he had a fast car, and he had money. And I was thinking, I want what that guy has. You know, if his ass can do it, you know, maybe there's a shot that I could do it. I asked that guy to be my sponsor. I was like, dude, I want what you got. You know, I'm willing to do any length, you know, to get it. That's where my program actually started. And I started taking action and doing the deal. And he might not have been the best sponsor, you know. I mean, there was some shady stuff that he did, but he got me into the program with Alcoholics Anonymous and made it attractive for me to want to come back, you know, and to want to do the deal. I mean, nowadays, the things that attract me are you know, peace of mind and spirituality and being the best Steve I can, not cheating, lying, or stealing, which is my M.O. Those are the things that I do naturally. It feels good for me to lie, cheat, and steal. It's my first reaction to everything. If you see me doing anything other than that, then that's a God working in my life. So this sponsor took me through the steps, you know. And we kind of went through pretty fast. And we went to meetings. We went and had coffee and we talked to newcomers and everything was cool and everything was working out and my life was starting to come together. I got a job and I could start making straight sentences and I was becoming accountable and I was taking direction and I was starting to realize that my way wasn't the best way, obviously. After about 4.5 years, the sponsor moved away. And so here I'm in Santa Barbara. It's fucking awesome, right? I mean, it's just beautiful there, and there's pretty girls everywhere, and the employment opportunity was good for me. I was young, and I'm doing good. And so my sponsor moved away, and I decided not to get a sponsor again, you know, another sponsor. I was thinking, you know, I got this. You know, I'm just going to hit a couple meetings here and there, and I was 5 years sober, and I was dating this girl, and it was my birthday, not my sobriety birthday, but my natal birthday. So I think my sponsor had been gone for about 6 months, 8 months or something, and she wanted to do something special for me for my birthday, so we went to the Circle Barbie Ranch. It's this place where you can rent these cottages and you can go horseback riding and stuff, and she knows my deal and she knows I can't drink or do drugs, and she drinks, and she in the room she had her bottle of her champagne, right? And you know, she was thoughtful and she got me some non-alcoholic drink, and I was all cool, this is gonna be awesome. So we're out riding horses and just enjoying the scenery and stuff, and we get back to the hotel room, and you know, I haven't talked to a sponsor. I really haven't hit any meetings lately, and the opportunity to drink presented itself right in my face, and I had no mental defense because I hadn't been going to meetings. I hadn't been talking to a sponsor. I hadn't been doing the things that are suggested to do, and I was running again on self-will run riot. And luckily for me, you know, I took a drink. I drank that champagne. And I remember, I finished that champagne, and I was starting to get a little head change, and I'd like to call it a moment of clarity, and I was thinking, I know where this is going to fucking end up. I know where I'm going to end up. You know, this is the worst thing I could be doing right now. I was able to put the drink down right then, and I think it's only by God's grace that he had a plan for me to do something else than to go back down that road and get crazy and make fucking snowbirds and grass. You know? So it was easy for me to come back to the rooms of AA because I kept it a secret for a long time. You know, I started coming back to meetings. I didn't do any steps. I just kinda lingered in the rooms, and I would just you know, keep the social aspect going and talking to people. And what happened to me is I didn't start drinking. But I started doing some behaviors that were pretty bad. You know, what I was doing was I was going out to the clubs in Santa Barbara and I was hooking up with all these drunk chicks. That's what I was doing. That was my MO. I was hitting up. Now I'm not going to talk about that. But I was, let's just say business was good. You know, I was sober and I was feeling good, you know, pretty good about that. And then, you know, you can only do that. I can only do that for so long until it just starts adding up to, you know, in my conscience, and I started feeling bad. And what happened to me? I got one of those college chicks pregnant, and if I've learned anything in AA, it's we take responsibility for our actions, and that's just what I've done. I have an 8-year-old daughter now, and I get her every other weekend. I've never missed a payment on child support, and she loves her daddy, and you know, her and her mom are, her and me, the mom, is on a cordial basis, and we get along. There's no drama, there's no fighting. The mom is a school teacher and has our daughter in a private school, and she's living a good life, a lot better than how I grew up. And it's just awesome. So after having my daughter, it really made me look at myself, and I realized I got to change these behaviors. I can't keep, you know, I'm going to end up getting half this town pregnant or something. I can't afford this shit. It's killing me, dude. And so, you know, I'm back in AA. I'm hitting the rooms again, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I need to start doing what these people are talking about. I need to get another sponsor. I need to start doing the deal. And I started looking around the rooms, and I'm really just procrastinating, and I'm just looking for a guy that's really doing the deal. And I see Jason out in Santa Barbara, and I see he's on fire for this thing, and I think he's got 2 or 3 years sober, and he's just on top of his game. So, you know, I ask him, dude, you know, after this meeting, I was all, would you be my sponsor? He's all, let's sit over here and talk for a minute. You know, are you willing to go to any lengths? I'm all, yeah. Any lengths is okay. Well, just think about that question, and we'll meet at a coffee shop tomorrow. I was all right. So I meet him at this coffee shop, and he's like, okay, you know, are you willing to do 90 meetings in 90 days? And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Don't you realize, dude, I've been in and out, you know, for so long. I don't really think I need to do 90. I didn't really say that, but I'm thinking it. And I agreed to do it, you know, and I'm grateful for that. And Jason is really, has got me back on track with my program. And Jason moved away, actually. And so the thing that I did different was I got a sponsor immediately after he moved away. You know, I continued on this path of trying to be the best Steve I can be, and to be trustworthy and honest, and practicing the principles in all my affairs. And I'm not a pro at it. You know, I still have a lot of character defects, and you know, I've been in a 5-year relationship. It's amazing for me. This is the longest relationship I've had in my life, and it's not with my baby's mom, but it's with another girl, and you know, she's a little psycho. You know, I feel sick a little bit. I mean, come on. I'm just wearing a tie and a shirt. I'm up here. It was hard for me to come up here, really. I haven't done this that many times. I'm just going to start talking about some steps. The first step, you know, I admitted I was powerless over alcohol. It's a 2-part step. Admitted I was powerless over alcohol. Easy for me to do. How many times did I tell myself that I'm only going to drink this much and I always overshoot the mark, or swearing off, I'm not going to drink, and I do, you know? My life was so unmanageable, the second part, it had to be managed for me in jails and institutions. I didn't know how to live. I didn't have a design for living. I didn't know when to sleep and when to eat, and somebody had to tell me, you know? You know, from watching you guys and learning from sponsors, you know, I know when to how to take care of myself better, and I don't know, I just learned so much in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had a week to think about my story, and I'm just drawing a blank. Step 2, I came to believe the power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. A part of my story I forgot to tell you about was, when I was in that rubber room smearing poop everywhere and peeing everywhere and yelling and stomping, and there was a point where I looked up to the ceiling and I said, please God, help me. You know, shortly after that, you know, not too long after that, I slowly started coming back to sanity. I came to believe that the power greater than myself could restore me to sanity before I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, so step 2 wasn't very hard for me either. Step 3, when I really did step 3, when I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him, think well before that step, you know. When I took that step, all of a sudden, I got a conscience. I can't get away with the same stuff I used to get away with. You know, in early sobriety, I'm just going to be honest. I used to hook up with newcomer girls, you know, in early sobriety. And now that I've taken that step through the entirety of my being, I can't get away with that anymore. Immediately, if I even start talking to a newcomer girl, I start feeling bad and shitty, and I feel like I've done something wrong. I got to tell someone about it. It's ridiculous. The fourth step wasn't very hard. It's making a list and the real hard thing was doing that fifth step, sharing that with somebody else. And, you know, Jason did that fifth step with me, and it was hard. I put some stuff on there that I thought I was taking to my grave. He knows some deep-seated stuff about me that curl people's toenails. I don't know, he probably forgot about it, but I remember that I told him. Sick, sad on that. Entirely ready to have these defects removed. The problem with me is I've been entirely ready to have some defects of character, all my defects of character removed. What happens with me is I'll start feeling good again, you know, halfway through this, and I'm starting to feel good, and I start taking those defects back. I don't know about you guys, but I start feeling good. You know, I'm starting to look good, and I start running amok again and running on self-will, and start over again. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Step 7. I got to remember, I'm asking him to remove my shortcomings. I'm not trying to remove my shortcomings myself. And I get twisted on that sometimes. I think that I'm doing something wrong because I can't get rid of these defects. And I got to remember that it's my higher power that in his time will take them away. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them. I still have a ton of amends, you know, to make. And when I see those people, I'll make them. I've made some amends, and each amend that I've made, I feel a little bit lighter on my feet, and I feel a little bit better, and I feel like I'm doing my higher power's will. That's the 9th step, right? I kind of got that twisted up. Today, 11, 10, 11, and 12. You know, I continually write an inventory, and I got a couple guys that I do the 11th step with, and the way we do it is I take 10 minutes, sometimes 15 minutes out of my day every day, and I get quiet time, and I do my prayers and my meditations, and then when I'm finished with this, I text them, you know, check, you know. Insult check, and they do the same thing with me, and it kind of keeps us accountable with each other. Step 12, I think I'm kind of doing step 12 right now. I'm trying to carry the message. I reach my hand out to newcomers, and I work the steps with new guys. And I actually got a couple guys that we started a little book study, and we go to the coffee shop and do that, and we look for other guys that are raising their hands as newcomers in meetings, and we try to recruit them to come in and try to carry the message that way too. I'm trying to think of some more stuff to talk about. Still got all kinds of time. I can dance. Sober. Don't judge me. Okay. If you're a newcomer and you didn't relate to anything that I said, keep coming back. I'm just one guy. I'm just one story. There's several hundred, you know, people that you'll get a chance to relate to. The message I wanted to carry tonight was, and this will work for everybody, it's been my experience that if I work the steps to the best of my ability, no matter how weak that looks, if it's honestly the best of my ability, I can recover from alcoholism and the obsession of drink and use will be lifted. That's the message I really want to get across. You know, get a sponsor. Blue collar AA is the way to do it. You know, get in the steps. It's no accident I'm standing up here before you. I've done action upon action. You know, I take commitments. I reach my hand out. I call my sponsor every day. I do all the things that's suggested because I don't want to go back to that place of walking into people's houses with bars and fucking just crazy, man. I wish I had more to talk about. That's all I got.
All right, let's thank Steve again for a good talk. Also like to thank anybody that has a commitment at this meeting. The speaker will be available after the meeting to thank for sharing his story. I'd like to ask Angel to close us out with a prayer of his choice. Keep coming back.
Thank you.